Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hello, and welcome to ID the Future. I'm Tom Gilson. On today's episode, I'm pleased to bring you an audio commentary by Greg Kokel, founder of Stand to Reason at str.org. In the excerpt I'm about to play, Kokel discusses a recent Discovery Institute Press book by Jonathan Witt and Finnish bioengineer Matti Leisala. The book is Heretic, One Scientist's Journey from Darwin to Design.
I love it when, in a certain sense, someone from the other side crosses over. That is, especially in the area of Darwinian evolution, which I reject on the merits themselves. I do not reject Darwinism, that is the macro evolution, neo-Darwinian synthesis. I don't reject it because I'm a Christian. Hey, I'm a Christian. I'm not supposed to believe that. Because there are a lot of Christians who do believe it. Now, I think they believe it in a way that creates problems for their Christianity. But I'm just letting you know that I'm not closing my eyes to science because I have a Bible that tells me to do so. I think Darwinism fails on the merits. And this is why it's so satisfying when someone who is steeped in that tradition makes a change, and makes a change principally because of the merits. That is, the reasons in favor of Darwinian evolution, he realized, are not persuasive, but in fact something else is going on to keep that paradigm alive, and that is actually two things in my view, and he does speak to it. It is the power of a paradigm that is driven principally by a philosophy. And that's the philosophy of materialism, and the power of a paradigm. I'm sorry, the power of a reigning paradigm, which that refers simply to the power of people in power who have the ability to cut off debate when it isn't going their way. And when he slowly became aware of both of those things, three things, which includes the problem with the merits of the case for Darwinism itself, that's when he decided eventually to jump ship. Now, part of his critique, the biochemist Matti Leisala, I guess is the way you pronounce it, because there are two authors here, he had dismissed the intelligent design model, let's put it that way. He had dismissed it because this was just simply another example of God of the gaps. That is, the way this objection is frequently characterized is that you guys just don't know what happened, and so you stick God in that gap of knowledge. Okay? That's what's called the God of the gaps. And what he came to realize at some point is that the God of the gaps criticism, this is one of the things that he realized that helped turn his mind around, is the God of the gaps criticism cuts both ways. Because a functional atheist could also insert their materialistic appeal or explanation in any knowledge gap. And this is exactly what happens. I hear it from Michael Shermer all the time, American Atheist, Skeptic Magazine, evolutionist, who says, in the face of daunting evidence against Darwinism, we'll say, and this is particularly at a couple of specific points, like the origin of life and then the development of life into different life forms, he'll simply say, why can't we just say we just don't know? Why can't we just say we just don't know? Now, there's an appeal there to the gap. We don't know. Okay, we don't need to put God in that gap. Why can't we just say we just don't know? And of course, what he means is we just don't know now, because he's convinced that we will know eventually, because eventually science will fill the gap with a naturalistic explanation, so there's no need to appeal to God. Now, here's the problem with that approach. First of all, it is guilty of what it is criticizing. It is criticizing a God of the gaps by replacing it with a science of the gaps. He's sticking a scientific question mark in there. He's sticking something in there to plug the hole. He doesn't know what it is, but he's sure that it's something naturalistic that will eventually be able to explain it. So this is just, like Matty Lesola says, this God of the gaps criticism can cut both ways because the atheist is going to put his own thing in the gap, that is his faith in naturalism, okay? And that brings me to the second problem with this God of the Gaps appeal, is that this is circular. How is it circular? Circularity is when you're assuming what needs to be proved. Well, what are they assuming? They're assuming that the gap will be filled with some naturalistic explanation because there must be one. But of course, that's the whole thing in question here, whether naturalistic explanations are adequate to explain everything. And when you look at some of these gaps, they seem to be so profound that even in principle, a naturalistic explanation is not going to be adequate. Yet if you assume naturalism, there must be one, then you can readily place that naturalistic question mark in the gap, meaning we don't know the naturalistic answer, but we do know there is one we will find eventually. So not only are they playing God of the Gaps in reverse, but they are also assuming what needs to be proved, that naturalism is adequate to fill every gap. But here's the third problem, is they're not just sticking G-O-D in a gap. In fact, the ID folk will say when it comes to these kinds of things, there is no gap. There's no gap of knowledge. We know, based on the existing evidence, what caused that thing. Because all of the evidence points to an agent who caused that thing. How do we know that? Because we know how agency works. You know why? Because we are ones. We are agents. And we know that certain things are the result of agents making decisions to act in a certain way and invent and build and develop things with know-how. That is, they use know-how to develop these things. We know how to recognize when something is so intricately fashioned that it requires know-how for it to function the way it functions. That means there is no gap of explanation. We have an explanation that is entirely adequate. It just doesn't fit the philosophy that is being forced upon us. There's another, and this is why, by the way, the point is made here that with regard to this book, Heretic, that there is a naturalistic evolutionary faith that is doing a lot of work. And by faith, I mean what they mean by faith. That means what you put your trust in something, you have no good reason to do it. It's not what I mean by faith. It's not what the Bible means by faith, but it's what the atheists define faith as, and that fits here. Because they are faith in a process that is not adequate to the task. There isn't evidence to show that the process they're having faith in can accomplish what they need it to accomplish. And one of those is massively the origin of life. And one of the points made here in the book Heretic, and again, I haven't read it, but I'm looking at the review, I'm seeing what is said about it, is that the knowledge gap is not shrinking. It isn't like all these gaps, what used to be big and we didn't know how it worked, and now we realize science, well, all of these gaps are shrinking. Well, many of them are, as we learn more, but there are certain gaps that are regular and systematic that are not getting smaller, they're getting larger because of the nature of the gap. And I just mentioned one of those, and that's the origin of life. You know, life, even its most simplest, is so massively complex. Every single cell is like a small city in its complexity and all the things that it does. And it is just not judicious to presume that all of these things happened by any kind of accident, but especially the accident of genetic mutation and natural selection. It's not adequate to do the job. And the more that we find out about these things, the bigger these gaps get, making, by the way, the agency explanation to fill the gap with an explanation, not a G-O-D word, to fill the gap, to bridge the gap with an explanation that fits the available evidence, why that is becoming more and more persuasive. Because it does such a good job, and these other naturalistic gaps are growing growing by leaps and bounds. He makes another, in the article, there's another point that's made that is one that Alvin Plantin has made. And it's an inherent difficulty, it might be called an external conceptual problem, to the Darwinian model. And that is, and here's the statement in the article, naturalism is destructive to science. Do you hear this? Naturalism is destructive to science. Now, that's the philosophy that guides the whole scientific enterprise right now. Naturalism is actually destructive to science, the claim goes, because it offers no basis for believing that we evolved to find correct answers. It offers no basis for believing that we've evolved to find correct answers. You see, evolution does not select for truth. It selects for survivability, or more precisely, it selects for getting our selfish genes into the next generation most effectively. It's all it cares about. And it certainly is conceivable that there is some element in our development that causes us to believe something false, and that false belief is what helps us to get our genes in the next generation into the next generation more effectively. So Darwinism, selecting for survivability, generally speaking, and not for truth, raises a big question mark then about the process of our brains that allows us to come to the conclusion that Darwinism itself is true. How can we make sense? How can we trust a chance process that develops our brains and thinking to give us a reliable process to discover truth, especially when that chance process does not select for truth in the first place? That's the complaint being raised here, and that's the point that the well-known eminent philosopher over at Notre Dame University, Alvin Plantin, has raised. I think C.S. Lewis raised something similar, a point like that. In any event, this scientist, Matty Laisola, in the process of not only looking at the evidence and realizing how much of the model, the Darwinian model, is being propped up by the power of a philosophic paradigm, naturalism, and seeing evidence to the contrary, this is what began to drive him to be a heretic to that point of view. A couple of thoughts here in the article that talk about the process. It says, Laisola and Witt leave us with two thoughts to ponder. First, after writing 140 reviewed papers with over 5,000 citations, Laisola found that, quote, the more groundbreaking the science I did, the harder it became to get the work accepted. Close quote. That's not about ideas such, but about a certain loss of adventurousness in science generally, they say. Darwin isn't the only icon no one dare challenge. He is just the one best known to the average reader. Second, Laisola concludes, quote, I came to understand through my many international connections that neo-Darwinism, while little valued among mainstream biologists who spend any time thinking about the theory, was treated by them all as a third rail, too dangerous to touch, close quote. So I'm glad for people like this, because what they are saying more and more is that, first, this is something that, on the merits, the point that I started with, doesn't have the chops to stand up on its own. But because of a power play grounded in a philosophic paradigm, naturalism, the paradigm of Darwinism is not allowed to be challenged. It's protected. Why does it need to be protected? Because it can't stand up on its own. Or as Richard Lewontin said famously in the New York Review of Books a number of years ago, he's a Harvard geneticist and obviously a Darwinist, we cannot allow a divine foot in the door. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's all about. It's about philosophy. It's not about following the evidence where it leads, they point out here in this book. It's about the power of a paradigm. And I have asked many times, do you want the right answers or do you want the right kinds of answers? And that's the question I think any scientist in this field has to struggle with. Do you want the right answers, that is, the facts of how this actually took place, without just dismissing things because you don't like it, or you want to call it religion rather than science? If the scientific methodologies are in place, if the points of view are well justified, it shouldn't matter whether it is a naturalistic answer or not. So do you want the right answers, or do you demand the right kinds of answers, those answers that comport with naturalism, materialism, and physicalism? That's the question.
That was author and radio talk show host Greg Kokel, founder of Stand to Reason. Go check more of Kokel's work at str.org, and you can find the excellent book he discussed at Amazon. It's called Heretic, One Scientist's Journey from Darwin to Design. And if you've already read the book and loved it, please do us a favor and go add a quick review at Amazon. Every bit helps. For ID the Future, I'm Tom Gilson. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.